Yeah, Dave, whenever we hear the copy machine, Dave is rotating his head. That's what I'm thinking, too. I don't think the head is steady when you're imitating the copy machine. Are you rotating the head clockwise, counterclockwise, or is it a set, rigid head?
A set, no, I rotate it left to right, and I move my arms.
Really? I did not know the arms would be part of it, too.
This is physical comedy as expressed via radio.
Exactly. Laurel and Hardy have now joined us.
No. Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin is more my style.
Very nice. Nothing better than a silent talkie on radio. It's really
my speciality. Yes, indeed.
Very subjective. Okay, let's
bring the silence to great radio.
Yes,
that's what I do.
The important pauses, which are a strong part of a baseball broadcast. Let's start with the Middle East and what this
underappreciated
week.
Underappreciated part.
Yes. Oh yeah. Trust
currently,
me.
Currently.
Yes, that is correct. Emphasizing that correct. What a week in the Middle East with Israel and technology, with pagers, with walkie-talkies, and then. Not attacks at Gaza, not attacks at Hamas, but going after Hezbollah. Hezbollah attacking once again at Israel. Israel saying today they've killed a top leader. Where are we headed? There has been this conversation and fear that whether it's the longstanding battle with Hamas, the longstanding battle with Hezbollah, the concern about when and if other countries would get in the Middle East, how we would react. How seminal is this week regarding what the next few months could be like or the next few years might be like in the Middle East?
You know, we'll know in about 3 or 4 months, and that's not a cop-out, but the phrase that has come from the Biden administration for weeks, if not months, is, we don't want this to rapidly escalate and get out of control. Okay, well, that rapid part hasn't happened, but you can't look at the last 2 months in the region and say things haven't escalated. They've just sort of escalated gradually. Like, each marker is reached, an escalatory one, then there's kind of pause by both sides and sort of rhetoric, well, we'll see where things are. Then there's another move to escalate. And it doesn't blow completely out of control or establish a battle space that encompasses the entire region, but it still gets worse. More people die. The either lethality or ingenuity, or probably both, of the attacks increases, certainly on the Israeli side. And this thing this week is of a kind of not incomprehensible, but advanced technological means of warfare that was theorized, but we've never seen.
No.
Like, could anyone intercept, implant, and then trigger beepers or walkie-talkies under a certain circumstance?
Yeah.
That's been theorized, but, man, it happened. It happened with strategic implications we don't know the bottom line of. We just don't know. We don't know how Hezbollah is going to think about this because, remember, they made the shift to beepers because they were under the very real impression that their cell phone communications had been compromised by Israeli intelligence. So they went down the technological ladder in a more crude sort of 80s, 90s direction, thinking that would be safer.
Yeah.
Proved to be more lethal.
I thought I was watching The Wire when I was reading about pagers.
Yeah, I mean,
and beepers.
And then you continue to have Houthi attacks into Israel proper.
Yep.
Iran is constantly playing its malevolent role. And Israel's politics are, by turns, unified and divided over its fate, over the leadership of the Netanyahu government, over what to do in Gaza, and the fate of the remaining hostages. All of it is bitter, bloody, and so deeply traumatizing. I can't predict what's going to happen. I can't at all. Because if you'd asked me a week ago, I would say, well, things are sort of slightly escalating, but it seems of the traditional kind of warfare. Rockets fired from Lebanon, counterstrikes from Israel, and the like. I did not have beepers, walkie-talkies turned into miniature bombs by remote control on my list of probabilities at all.
No, and let's add this. Excuse me. If Israel has this ability to do this, how far away is it where other countries, maybe ourselves included, can do this with cell phones? And the whole world has cell phones, and how we might remember this was just the start of incredibly different warfare where it's with you all the time. And the individuals they're targeting, or individuals who are Americans who are targeted, and how this changes everything. There's a Wall Street Journal story today, which I'm sure you saw, if not read it or on Twitter, where they're reporting that U.S. officials are conceding that a ceasefire is out of reach during the Biden administration. That's pretty stunning, I would say, considering the number of times Joe Biden told us we're close, we're almost there, and the multitude of other countries involved. I mean, is this a matter of all parties saying, let's see who's running the shop in January? Or what's your read on how this is playing out?
Well, it might be the latter. Let's see who's going to be elected. I don't think they need that question in their minds, meaning the parties negotiating, to not reach a deal. Look, the requirements of the Israelis are unacceptable and have been to Hamas for months. The requirements of Hamas aren't acceptable to the Israelis. The Egyptians do not have the negotiating clout to make this happen. The Jordanians don't. The Lebanese don't. The Lebanese government, by the way, Hezbollah is sort of a pseudo-occupying force. The Lebanese government is extremely weak. They can't exert any diplomatic pressure, even to stop violence in their own country. So even when even when the parties went into a negotiation way back when at Camp David, when President Carter was trying to achieve peace between Egypt and Israel, and they wanted to achieve peace, it required 11 consecutive days of presidential involvement and doing nothing else in Camp David with the negotiators, and that thing broke down numerous times, and they wanted to reach a deal, okay?
Yeah.
Plenty of hearts have been broken of American presidents trying to get something negotiated in that region where the differences were not nearly as vast. The bitterness, the bloodshed, the acrimony, not nearly as advanced and traumatic as it is now. They are conceding something that I think has been pretty clear to those watching from the outside for a long time. Though President Biden was relentlessly optimistic, the sides are not interested. And there is a body of thought in the U.S. government and certainly in Europe that Netanyahu doesn't want a deal.
Yep.
Because a deal then focuses attention on his future, politically and otherwise.
Yeah. Legally.
So I don't know. I'm not asserting that. But more than one group of analysts looking at this dispassionately has said that the political matrix for Netanyahu does not favor a ceasefire nearly so much as it does continuous warfare.
Hang on, sir. I want to come back with the great Major Garrett, and I want to talk to him about what Donald Trump said yesterday at an anti-Semitism event regarding Jewish voters, and it's on them. And then get to his opponent, the vice president, and her inability to answer direct questions, because I'm left shaking my head almost every time I listen to the vice president answer questions. It's 47 past 12 on CCO. Continuing with Major Garrett, it's 51 past 12, so we're just talking Middle East. The former president had multiple events yesterday speaking to Jewish voters, including one event to Miriam Adelson. Miriam and her late husband Sheldon have donated large, large sums of money to the former president. And the president went back, Major, as you know, to one of his moves whenever he's in front of Jewish groups, saying, how could you ever vote for Democrats? You should have your head examined. And if I lose, the Jews will have a lot to do with it. He's at an anti-Semitic event, and he's saying that. It's stunning, and the former president needs to understand something, that there are a lot of people of a lot of faith, and they vote for a myriad, multiple reasons, not just, let's say, a country where their religion may have started. And he can't get over the fact that he thinks every person who's Jewish in this country only votes based on how the U.S. treats Israel. Hot take. There's a lot of people who are of the Jewish faith who don't agree with Benjamin Netanyahu, wouldn't have voted for him, don't agree with how he's handled this. But at an anti-Semitic event, he's generalizing with the best of them.
Or the worst of them.
Yes, correct.
Depending on your point of view.
Yes.
So whenever former President Trump, and this was true when he was president, when he was a candidate, and he was the nominee in 2016, believes he's in a political fix, the transactional part of his persona becomes more visible, and the fangs of it are more clearly evident. And I would just say as a general observation, because this race is not where it was 8 weeks ago, the best that former President Trump can say is he's tied, but in most battleground states he is trailing, depends on the margin, but he's not where he was 8 weeks ago. The race is not where it was. He's feeling less and less confident. He's feeling more and more pressurized. And therefore, in those spaces, and you can look back through his record, he's much more plainly transactional. You do this for that reason. That's my belief. And that's what you're going to do. And if you don't, I'm going to be disappointed in you. This is a transaction here. It's like real estate, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I want something. You're going to give it to me. And if you don't give it to me, you, whoever you are, I'm going to be disappointed in you, and I'm going to blame you. And not so subtly in that is, if I do win and you weren't with me enough, I'm going to remember.
Yes. A lot of that.
And something may come your way that is unwelcome. One quick other thought about what we were talking about before the break.
Sure.
In any technologically advanced military power, there is always a calculus about something new that the world hasn't seen that you're capable of. And there's a very big risk reward in showing the world of this new capability. One, you convey what you're able to do. Two, you instantly create a means by which to copy or remanufacture what you've just done that no one's ever seen before. The consequences of what happened this week, to your point a moment ago, may show up in other places, in other conflicts, simply because Israel has now proven to the world this can be done.
Yep.
And it's always a very big risk reward when you have something new the world hasn't seen before, whether or not you use it.
Since we last chatted last Friday, I watched the entire interview that Kamala Harris did with a Pittsburgh anchor. I watched a portion of her interview with the National Association of Black Journalists, and I just saw a number of highlights from her interview with Oprah last night. And I am still stunned at an accomplished individual who has faced interviews for decades, Major, her inability to succinctly and directly answer questions with specifics. She just doesn't want to do it, or she's not capable of doing it. So when people tell me how she's a different person from 4 years ago, well, she is in policy positions. She has more experience. But when one of the two individuals who's going to be president is to ask important, valid, specific questions, and she dances all over them constantly, I think people should pay attention to that.
No question. And there is a part of this analysis that they have so far adhered to, which is it's better to run out the clock than to answer questions.
Yep.
And the clock is short. And she's got an interesting option that no other candidate seeking the presidency in the modern era of American politics has had. The shortest clock imaginable, the least amount of rigorous scrutiny, and the most advantageous atmosphere in which to take advantage of a vibe or a sense or an emotional uplift, all of which can help you win an election. They make it painfully difficult, however, to govern. Painfully difficult to govern. And I would observe this about any candidacy for the presidency. You must think about both. Do not kid yourself that only winning matters. Winning matters, of course, first and foremost, because you can't govern without it.
Yep.
But you must marry the two in structure and in concept and in being and who you are. Because if you are trying to establish the means by which to tell Congress, I have a mandate to do this because I've explained it, and I've explained it so thoroughly that my constituents in the country, broadly speaking, know what I'm about and why I'm about that. If you can't connect those dots, politically and otherwise, your agenda, whatever it is, will not get nearly as far. And they're not merging the two, in my estimation, because clearly she, I would think, has answers, would want to make sure people understand those answers, and also internalize the cost of not giving them.
Yep.
Because you're not alone, Chad.
Yeah.
People talk to me about this all the time.
It's not getting
and
better.
They're beginning to get they're beginning to get their hair on the backs of their neck raised. Like, what is this?
Yep.
Why aren't you answering?
I have to go, sir.
I know.
Fabulous
I know.
As always. Have a great weekend. We'll talk next week.
Thanks.